From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Today we're going to do some gravel gardening, not merely applying a thin mulch-like top dressing of gravel to a garden bed, but planting right into a deliberate foundation of 4 or 5 inches of gravel. My guest is Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Ulbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison, Wisconsin, where he created his first gravel garden in 2009. We'll learn what makes gravel gardens so appealing and how to create one too. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com. Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbook, Small Gift Books Illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now.
That first gravel garden at Ulbrich Botanical Gardens that Jeff Epping and his team created wasn't the last. There have been 3 more since, and gravel gardens created elsewhere for clients, too. Jeff, who lectures regularly to garden audiences around the country about his passion for gravel gardens, even transformed the front yard of his home to one in 2018, and he's here to tell us why and how. Hi, Jeff. How is spring unfolding in beautiful Madison, which is the land of many gardens, as I remember having been there years ago?
Oh, Margaret, it's great to be with you. It's a little chilly as it's been of late. Sun shining for a change.
Yay!
So we're happy about that, and all things are moving forward.
Yeah. So when you and I did a New York Times garden column earlier this year together about gravel gardens, what really made me laugh was you confessed early on in our conversations that you really didn't like the term gravel garden anyhow, even though in this country you're a leading proponent of planting into deep gravel. So you don't like the term because, and just tell us a little bit.
I don't like it because it doesn't conjure up beautiful flowery images of what these types of gardens can be, which are as beautiful as any other type of garden. And I think when people think of gravel gardens, they may think of sort of a rocky alpine garden. It's very hard and not so showy, but That's not true. So anyway, I still call them gravel gardens since I haven't come up with a better
right. So it's like rock gardens aren't about the rocks, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Same kind of thing. So the first gravel garden I ever saw, and actually it was 2 of them in the same trip to England many, many, many years ago. One was the seaside garden of the late artist Derek Jarman. And the other was the car park, as they say, for parking lot in England, the gravel car park at Beth Chaddow's Nursery and Garden, famous, famous place. What inspired you?
I must admit, it too was Beth Chaddow's dry garden, as I think they call it. And
yeah.
Fascinated by how beautiful it was and that it was a former parking lot. And so I took lots of photographs and asked as many questions as I could. And then it just kind of got parked in my memory until I saw a small gravel garden that Roy Diblick, who's a good friend of mine and just down the road at Northwind Perennial Farms here in Wisconsin, he put in a very small garden. And he was inspired by Cassian Schmidt's gravel garden in Germany. And he visited with Pete Udolf, and Cassian told him all about it. And he came back and started one himself. And upon a visit, I saw it. I was like, Roy, what the heck is this? And so he told me about it. And I said, well, we're gonna have to do one of those at Ulbrich. And so we did about a year later. And I actually had Roy involved in it a little bit because I wanted to, I wanted him to have a part of it. And so from that time, it just took off. So 2010, 12, 14, 16, all the gravel gardens went at Ulbrich and then mine at home in 18. And I created a very large garden with the Epic Systems staff out west of Madison, which is 3 acres in size. And it's actually a rooftop garden. It's over a underground parking structure that
has
thousands of cars. So it made perfect sense to put in a very drought tolerant garden.
Right. Well, to that point, I've read and Beth Chatto, she was a great garden writer as well, and she even wrote a book in I think 2000. The first edition of it came out, about gravel gardens and so forth. And so her garden, that former car park, is even older than that. I've read that it has never required supplemental irrigation. So is this a water-wise approach? And what else does sort of gravel gardening have to recommend it? It's kind of, what's the pitch when you tell people?
No, absolutely. That's what a big part of it, right? Is that we need to do better. All gardeners, everybody in this country, in this world, need to do better with their use of water. And, you know, when Doug Tallamy talks about, you know, our love affair in this country with bluegrass lawns and the amount of water and other nasty things that go into lawns, you know, we just need to do better. So I just think gravel gardens are just one more way that we can garden without the huge inputs of water and energy through fertilizers, pesticides, all those things. So the basis of the garden is like you mentioned, 4 to 5 inches of gravel, which really is serving as a weed barrier.
Right.
For a seed to land on top of that amount of gravel, which is a washed gravel, which is very important. It maintains the airspace in between the particles of gravel, holds very little water, no free water at all. Mm-hmm. So for a seed to penetrate, you know, the root to penetrate that and grow and become, you know, a problem, so to speak, is very, very rare. And so it makes it very easy for us as gardeners to grow with this type of garden. And what I always say, it's a system. It's a concept of gardening. And it really needs to have very drought tolerant plants in it. And the great thing is our native prairie plants are among the best performers in a gravel garden. So we're getting, you know, the great qualities of their disease resistance and such, and water wise, you know, means, but we're also getting all of the wonderful animals, the insects, the birds, the mammals that eat, you know, the fruit from a lot of these plants and such. So it's a good thing for sure.
Yeah. So let's sort of visualize, let's pretend I have a bed, you know, an area, and we're not talking about, if one wants to get started in this and give it a try, for its water-wise qualities and its weed thwarting qualities and so forth. We're not talking about, you know, you did your whole front yard, but we're not talking about doing that as a first project. Let's say we have a bed. And, right. Like, always start small, Margaret. And so what do I need to do? I mean, I don't pile a bunch of gravel on top and stick plants. I mean, what do we do? And, or maybe I do that. And what do we do? And how do we retain the gravel within it and so forth? Just sort of describe the process.
Right. So we can create these gardens in an open space if we want, or near a building, south side of a building, west, you know, any side really.
Uh-huh.
Full sun is probably the biggest requirement. It's not absolutely essential, but the palette of plants is much larger if you do it in full sun. So that's
okay.
Most often. Anyway, so we want that gravel to be that depth, that 4 to 5 inches from the middle of the garden to the very edge. So what that means is we need to create some type of border that will hold the gravel in on the edges. If we just let it kind of go on its own, it'll thin right down to an inch and down to nothing. And then, of course, that's where we're going to get all sorts of weeds coming in. So we typically use some type of stone. It could even be a landscape paver, a larger, you know, bigger concrete paver if you want. We've done that on a couple projects. But that needs to be at least 6 inches above the existing soil. So that, you know, you have an inch of space at the top to hold the gravel in. Now, if you're doing it up against an existing building or even a sidewalk, a building, you have the foundation. So there's your border right there.
On one side, at least, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then your sidewalk or driveway, if you will.
Right.
There, obviously, it's set. So on the edge, and say in the first at least 18 inches to 2 feet, you dig it down to 6 inches at the very edge, and then just push that soil back farther in the bed and taper it off. And you could have a slight slope, 2, 3, even 5% slope. So that's no problem. I think one of the misconceptions people have is that you have to take away all of the soil 5 inches or 6 inches deep. That's not true. That's just okay. On the edges, you need to make sure you have that. But you can gently slope that. And that's what we've done with all of our gardens. We just keep soil there. Obviously, get rid of any weedy plants, any vegetation that's there. Get rid of any really bad guys like, you know, quack grass or Canada thistle or something that's going to come back to haunt you.
Oh, I've never had a weed. Have you ever had a weed? Oh.
Never.
No.
Well, once you get that border in, then you bring the gravel in, and we use about a quarter inch, 3/8 inch size. Three sixteenths, quarter inch size.
Yeah.
And we get a very hard gravel, something that won't break down over time. So sandstone, limestone, typically not so good. And that can change the pH as well.
Oh, okay. So is this like a granite-y kind of a thing?
Or? Yeah, granite. It's a quartzite, which again is hard, inert gravel. Yeah. I use pea gravel, you know, typical sort of pea gravel that's rounded. Mm-hmm. So those things all work. And in fact, in England, of course, Beth Chaddow's garden is the first and foremost, but Hyde Hall, which is another Royal Horticultural Society garden, has made a beautiful gravel garden there atop a hill overlooking the garden. And they use much larger gravel, even up to 1/2 inch in size, and so all sorts of different types. So, but no fines in it, you know, none of the real fine material that will become like a soil, right? Because then you have the potential for lots of reseeding, which is what we want to avoid.
Right. Now, to that point, though, there are, quote, gravel gardens that encourage some reseeding, but this is a different style than what we're talking about. I mean, in the United States, there's a gravel garden at Chanticleer, for instance, in Pennsylvania, right? Is that what I mean to say? Yeah. And so do they have some self-seeding there? Is some of the gravel a little thinner?
That's good. That's a very good point. And the gravel garden at Chanticleer is absolutely gorgeous. I know
it's spectacular. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all over Instagram. And so it's just beautiful. And I visited it a number of times there. Yes, they are encouraging or allowing lots of reseeding, but of course they have a gardener there tending to it, you know, every day.
Yes.
And so you can do that, but if you do that style, the amount of maintenance will greatly increase. Right. And so I feel that the value of these gardens for the average homeowner, and to get them to do this rather than grow grass and mow and all those things,
right,
is that we are making it less maintenance intensive than a lawn, for one, and even other types of perennial borders and such. And in my home garden, most of my garden is not gravel garden. It's just a small space.
Yeah.
But I am always like amazed at how little time I spend in it, which I love about it. And then I just love talking about it. All my neighbors walking by and such. And when I first did it, they thought I was absolutely nuts, like many of the things home. But now they're like, wow, this is cool. And I tell them about how little effort it takes to have something as beautiful as have there, you know, their ears perk up. And how might I do this, you know? So it's
good. We have this deep bed of gravel that we've created in the way that you've described, and it has this kind of curb edge, or, you know, all the way around, so that the gravel doesn't thin out at the edges, but stays consistently deep. And how in the world do I plant into that? So, you know, because it's a little counterintuitive to the way we usually plant. And what kind of plants? I mean, I'm assuming I don't want to get like a big, giant, multi-gallon perennial and try to wedge that into all that. How does this work, the planting?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And actually, planting is the fun part because after you do all the edges with the border and haul in the gravel and get it to the right depth, you know, that's kind of a chore. But the planting, you don't use even any tools. You just get yourself a good pair of leather or rubber gloves, and you kind of dig like a dog, and you put the, you know, the plug, if you will, into that hole. Now, we typically plant like 3.5 to 4.5 inch pots, quart pots, pine pots is what they're often called. Gallons only if we have to, because they're deeper than we want. So there we have to like reduce the depth by peeling off some soil and such and get them to about, you know, 4 to 5 inches. But once we do get, you know, whatever it is we're going to plant, we dig down, we see the soil below, we put the plug in, and then we just put the gravel around it. And so the roots may touch the soil below or they may not. I often tease them, you know, in my hand, because you're getting rid of any loose soil on the root ball. I always peel off like the top inch or so of any potted plant, because that's where dormant weed seeds are hiding.
It sure is. Yes. Yeah.
So once we, you know, do that, and then we plug them in and boom, we push the gravel back. It's not muddy at all. In fact, you never want to bring any of that soil below up into the gravel while you're planting, because that will have the potential weed seeds in it and become a weed problem.
Right. So, and then I assume that even though this is a water-wise garden in the long run, that initially, because these guys are kind of at first sitting in mostly gravel and aren't rooted down into the underlying soil yet, that we need to water carefully for a while, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always the funny part. And Roy mentioned that when he put his gravel garden in at Northwind, because people were like, you just told us this was a drought tolerant garden. Watering it like every other day.
Right.
Well, initially, yes, of course, you have to give the plants a chance to root down into the soil below. And as we know, prairie plants develop very deep root systems over time, but you got to, you know, got to get them there. And once you do, even in the second year, you're very limited amount of watering, often, you know, during just droughty periods, extended drought, and then year three, probably nothing unless you have some super drought. And then boom, you're off and running after that.
So the way you plant these gardens, your intention, and you're talking about prairie plants, and we'll talk a little bit in a minute about some favorite plants of yours that have done well in these settings, but your intention is that they're going to grow together. It's not like we're going to see miles of gravel in between once things grow in. And so what happens at cleanup time? I mean, you know, we all have as gardeners, we're used to a regimen of, you know, spring cleanup or fall cleanup. And I'm imagining that all that debris, again, might be the future home, if left in place, the future home for some seedlings and so forth. So what about cleanup? What's the regimen there?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And your cleanup is, you know, and that's something that we don't even do much anymore, at least, you know, those of us who are trying to garden more ecologically.
Right.
Leaving the debris, we're maybe mulching it a little, we're keeping stems up for bees and other insects and such. So, that is the one thing that is the most important maintenance task that you have, is a very thorough cleanup in the spring of that gravel. Because if that organic matter or that those leaves and all that stuff breaks down and enters the gravel, then you're sort of starting to create a soil, right?
Right.
And when we do that, then we have the right conditions for weed seeds to be able to become established. So I do leave stems up, hollow stems and such, to about 6-8 inches, but the rest of the material comes out. And I just cut back everything by hand. Even in our larger gravel gardens here, we do it all by hand with pruners, because if we use some type of a, string trimmer or whatever, it's going to make more pieces that are going to be harder to remove. And you got gravel flying all over.
Well, and I was going to say, that's definitely a safety issue. Yeah, for sure.
Right. So, so I could cut it back. I just kind of toss it on a tarp as I go. And then when I'm completely done, I wait a couple days, because we're doing this in early April, maybe even late March. Get in there. And so there might be still snow for us underneath some of that material. So we leave it a few days, it all dries. And then I go over a lightly rake and or use a blower. And I am not a big fan of blowers, but I have a little battery powered one. And that's everything here at Obrecht now, our small equipment is battery powered, including mowers. And so I just use that, go through it, clean it up. And then all around my gravel garden at home, I have other beds. I have perennial beds that I just take that material and then just blow it into that and use all that material as a mulch in my typical bed. So I'm not throwing any on the curb and having it all hauled.
Right.
And as I do it, I try to be aware of, you know, a lot of times tree leaves from my oaks and such around are in that gravel garden. So I try to be ginger with that when I take it out, because, you know, there might be cocoons of moths or butterflies or, you know, other insects in there. And I'm hopefully I'm helping to preserve those.
Right. So you're trying to gently relocate the stuff rather than destroy the stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I want to talk in the last, you know, 3-4 minutes, I wanted to talk about just a couple or a few plants. You were mentioning prairie plants, and you're obviously in the prairie region of the country and so forth. And Madison's a famous place for the, I think one of the most outstanding or one of the first prairie restorations is at the university there that, you know, we ever saw and all learned about and so forth. And so prairie plants, what are some stars kind of that you can't imagine a gravel garden without, some that, that really have been standouts for you that you, you are signatures or whatever at this point?
Yeah, you bet. Well, I always start out any of my plantings with grasses, you know, because they're such a part of base for the garden. And so things like prairie drop seed, you know, Spirobolus are great. Bootalua or side oats grama grass, which is a super drought tolerant grass. Little blue stem, Schizacrium, even big blue stem, if you have a big enough garden, you know, if you have a bigger space and you can take that height, blue stem or switchgrass, Panicum virgatum. You know, those are the base grasses for the system. And then I think probably my favorite perennial in the gravel gardens are pale purple coneflower. I can see a palata. That is truly a prairie plant and will last for years. Whereas Echinacea purpurea really isn't a prairie plant. It's more of a woodland edge.
Funny that we all have always thought of it as like a meadow or prairie wildflower, but in fact when you look at the range map for Echinacea purpurea or purple coneflower, it's not there.
right and we've tried it, and it just I mean, it's around for a while, but it really sticks around because it recedes a lot.
Right
and that's true of one of my favorite perennials that doesn't do well in a gravel garden, and that's rattlesnake master.
Oryngium. Is that an Oryngium?
Yeah, Oryngium yuccifolium. And I was perplexed as why I couldn't get it to stick around. And I spoke to my good friend, Neil DeBole of Prairie Nursery.
Yes.
And he was like, well, duh, Jeff. It always is in a prairie, but that's because it seeds regularly. And the plant, one individual plant does not last any length of time. And you're not allowing that to happen. And I said, oh, you're absolutely right. So I actually plug them in every few years because I love it.
You replenish it. Okay.
Yeah. So I do some of that.
Yeah.
So there's a whole list of, you know, like Euphorbia coralata, the prairie baby's breath is a fantastic plant in the gravel garden. A lot of the Penstemon digitalis for sure. Cup plant or compass plant.
Silphiums. Yeah. Those are big guys. Yeah.
Yeah, they are. They are. Rudbeckia maxima. The Coreopsis palmata is a good one. and it produces lots of great seeds. So I often see goldfinches munching on the seeds as they come through. Baptisias do great.
Lots of good possibilities.
Asters, goldenrods.
Yeah.
All those.
It's fascinating, and I'm tempted, and I keep thinking about, is there a bed here that I'm going to try this in? So Jeff Epping of Ulbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison, Wisconsin, a proponent of gravel gardening. Thank you for making the time today to sort of teach us the 101. And I'll give people more information on your other work and on Ulbrich and the link to the Times story that we did in more depth and things like that so they can study up. So thank you so much for making time, Jeff.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and sharing the good word about gravel gardens.
Yeah. Talk to you again soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbook, Small Gift Books Illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now. Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.